we can see that illuminated sign that marks the end of the journey.
This vaccine will help us get past this pandemic once and for all.
We need people to have faith that this vaccine is safe and that they should take it. The thing that's going to stop us from seeing the end of this pandemic are people going, oh, I'm not so sure.
Hello, you're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Roger Hearing.
Good afternoon, I'm Caroline Hepke. Well, the Greensill Capital scandal engulfing Westminster, Whitehall and now perhaps some NHS leaders is only likely to intensify this week, Roger, as multiple inquiries related to lobbying and business appointments get underway. So you've got Parliament's Influential Treasury Committee, which is going to set out terms for its investigation. Also, the Public Administration and Constitutional Affairs Committee begins its probe. Comments from the Chairman William Ragg saying that there is an understanding that, quote, something must be done. That's on top, of course, of an investigation commissioned already by Boris Johnson himself to try to draw a line under the controversy.
Well, while the fallout initially centred on David Cameron's lobbying of ministers on behalf of Greensill, scrutiny's widened amid allegations of, well, corruption. The Environment Secretary George Eustace, however, says David Cameron meticulously observed the rules.
Following that, if there's a general view in Parliament that the rules around declaration of ministers' interests could be changed slightly, or if there's a view that rules around what ministers can do when they leave office should be changed slightly, well, then that's a policy decision.
But the Shadow Communities Secretary, Steve Reid, is calling for a full parliamentary investigation into lobbying.
If we have an independent parliamentary inquiry into what's going on, open and transparent, and in David Cameron's own words, sunlight is the best disinfectant, well, let's expose this whole situation to that sunlight.
Well, for more, we're joined by Mary Foy, Labour MP for the City of Durham. Mary, thanks so much for being with us today. Let me get your take first. Well, do you think the various inquiries that we're seeing now, and there are a lot of them, will actually get to the root of what's been happening?
Well, as Steve Reid has said, we need it to be a proper independent inquiry and end once and for all this awful lobbying culture that's actually plaguing politics at the minute. And Labour have also said we would create an integrity and ethics commission to try and restore this trust. But we need an independent, there needs to be an independent look into this because it's a plague on politics at the minute. And whether or not it can be argued whether David Cameron has behaved improperly or not. But this isn't just about the single action of one disgraced politician. The Greensill scandal involves the Chancellor, the Health Secretary, two Treasury Ministers, a senior civil servant. You know, who else knows? So it's just shown how lax the rules on lobbying actually are and how the culture has infected really the heart of government.
Mm. But some lobbying, of course, is needed. I mean, lobbying to the sort of most positive side of lobbying, of getting important points across to government, is needed. And then surely there's a risk to all parties in this. No administration, including Labour's past government, has been entirely free of lobbying allegations.
Well, of course, there's lobbying will always happen. But this, what we've seen over the last, 10 years or even more, is scandalous. It's scandalous. It's about lining their own pockets at the expense of many people, especially during a pandemic. You know, just look at the scandal of the track and trace. The track and trace system, millions were poured into that system. It didn't work. That system was run by the partner of a sitting Conservative MP, you know, the Health Secretary's pub landlord was given contracts. It's absolutely outrageous, and it needs to be ended. It's cronies, it's chums of the government who are allowed to run through Whitehall, through civil service, and have access to all departments. And we've seen it's greed. And they're lying in their own pockets. Well, and many Conservatives and those linked with the Conservative Party have lined their own pockets during this pandemic.
All right,
back of people who were suffering.
Well, Mary, let me ask you then. I mean, if we go from this, and as we said, you know, many administrations of the past have also been fingered for this kind of thing. What should the rules say? Now, for example, should former politicians out of office now, be allowed to represent commercial companies and then, I guess, make approaches to their former colleagues? Should that just be banned? Should there be a time limit? What should be done?
Well, I haven't got the full answer, but yeah, why? You know, former politicians making a heck millions and millions of pounds because they have access to the Prime Minister or the
although not the proved an that's an accusation but not proved, right?
Which part that's not proved?
That former politicians have made money, have made millions. That is an accusation rather than something that's been proved, surely.
I don't think. I think it's well established that they've made money from it.
But in that circumstance, Mary, if we're looking at this, I mean, whether or not money has been made in the past, let's move it to the future and say what needs to be in place, what rules need to be there. That's what the question, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's the rules. I guess this is what this independent inquiry will look into and reach. They'll reach a decision to make sure that there is integrity and ethics. And, you know, if lobbying needs to happen, it needs to be done in an ethical way where you aren't lying in your own pockets and people aren't making money on the back of the poor, really, and the dying. And this country is what it was this year during the pandemic. You know, it isn't just Greensill. It was the West Ferry development scandal, the town fund scandals. There's an awful lot of scandals that are happening at the minute, procurement scandals that have been happening over the last decade or more, and it needs to end now. The public don't trust politicians, and who can blame them?
All right, Mary, but I mean, you say it's for the inquiries to put forward what should happen, but you are a politician. You know, you must surely have a view. What do you personally think would be the right way to deal with this if they asked you?
I honestly would suggest that we look into to carry out this commission in a right and proper way and find out what the loopholes are, how it has become so lax. I think you can lobby because, you know, we have charities that lobby. We have trade unions that lobby they're not using public funds. They're not using up public funds. We need lobbying to happen, but not in the way that's been happening over the last 10 years or more. It's outrageous.
Well, look, what about your seat in a Redwall area? Could the lobbying scandal actually start to bring votes back, do you think, to Labour? I mean, this is going to get quite crucial, obviously, because we've got local elections coming up, by-election too. Do you think that this will start to affect polling? There haven't been many recent polls to include this. Bernard Jenkin, though, for example, writing about it, thinks that it could.
Who knows? I think at a time when the Conservatives talked about the red wall and levelling up, well, this is actually smacked right in the face of levelling up. If we're talking about levelling up those poorer communities and the people who have really struggled throughout this pandemic and struggled for a decade with jobs and unemployment, to hear, for them to know, we have to shout really loudly about what's been going on with these cronies and the chums and the Tory donors who are making millions out of the pandemic. And if people realise that, hopefully they'll see that the Tory party don't actually care about those in the north, in the northeast, and the other red walls. They don't care about us at all, or they wouldn't allow this to happen. So, well, it's up to me, it's up to the Labour Party and others and the media to expose what's been going on, because far too often these things are hidden. They're hidden away. The news, our media don't shout about this. It needs to be there at the forefront.
Mary, let me ask you about something else which perhaps reflects on, in fact, on an old Labour slogan, which was for the many, not the few, because a lot of people have used that in relation to the latest about the football situation, this new Super League, saying it's a kind of elitist thing and actually depriving a lot of people, potentially, of a lot of fun, a lot of enjoyment for the benefit, financial benefit of a few. What's your take on it?
Oh, you know, you're asking somebody who doesn't even know the offside rule. But, you know, I don't know about football, but what I do know is, you know, this is outrageous. It's about Europe's richest clubs banding together just to protect themselves and generate more income from themselves at the expense of the smaller clubs and, crucially, the fans. You know, football is about the fans. It's nothing without the grassroots. And, you know, those grassroots teams, they created the star players that we're seeing now. And, you know, they're there to serve their local communities. And this is just about greed. And those, you know, the owners of those top clubs, they don't care about the local fans. It's about lining their own pockets again. It's about greed, and it's actually been killing the... Well, it's the people's game. It's been killing the game for years. And I think this should be stopped in its tracks. And from what I've seen in the media and the outrage from some prominent footballers and others, that hopefully this, you know, these teams need to be punished. They really do.
Mary, thank you so much for being with us. We shall see what happens with that story. You're right that it's made waves across Europe. Mary Foy is Labour MP for the City of Durham. Let's talk about the other big story, though. It's one, Roger, that has crossed all lines, actually. A story about football that has political and financial implications too. The FA, the Premier League and UEFA have all condemned it. Former United captain Gary Neville hopes that there are sanctions against those involved.
It's a criminal act against football fans in this country. Make no mistake about it. This is the biggest sport in the world. This is the biggest sport in this country. And it's a criminal act against the fans. Simple as that. Deduct points, deduct their money and punish them.
Well, joining us to discuss this is Bloomberg's David Hellier. David, thanks for being with us. First of all, nearing the start here, what is the European Super League?
The European Super League is a group of owners, really, of big clubs like Real Madrid, Arsenal, Manchester United, Liverpool, who've sort of been talking in the shadows for months, probably years, about creating a league from which they can never be relegated. When I first got to Bloomberg, quite a few people, when I started writing about football, asked me, what is relegation? And relegation and promotion is one of the tantamount things that, you know, brings all the excitement to football in Europe, and it's across every country. It's where, you know, teams can go up and down and their fortunes can ebb and flow, and it's what really drives most of us and gives most of us the interest and passion. And in this Super League, these owners have said, you know, we'd rather they just stay in the league the whole time, because that means we've got stable incomes. It's a much easier investor profile. You know, it makes our commitment, capital spend, worthwhile. But the trouble is, you know, it's very alien to European sensibilities.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is the world's biggest football clubs kind of gathering together in a breakaway league. What surprised me a bit about this story is that it's kind of a dozen of the best known names: Manchester United, Real Madrid, it's UK clubs, it's Italian clubs, and German clubs getting together. How did this come about then, without sort of people really knowing that this was coming? Or how much did people know that this Super League was going to, I mean, emerge almost kind of fully formed?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you follow the tea leaves like some of us do, this has been around for a long time. I mean, I wrote a story in January about it, which kind of barely registered, really, because it wasn't fully formed. I mean, you know, now it's pretty much fully formed. I mean, in fact, it's very interesting because each country has responded differently. I mean, Germany. They're very keen to get a German club, but so far, because German clubs are mostly fan-owned, they've turned it down. So Bayern Munich so far is not involved. France is not involved so far. So it's from only three countries so far. But I mean, now, you know, now 12 clubs. I mean, what you've always had four or five who've been absolutely stirring the pot for ages and ages and ages. And what they've managed to do in the last few days, probably, is to get that up to 12, which is kind of the number where you start to think, if I don't get into that league now, maybe I'll never get into it. And that's the conundrum that a lot of the clubs so far said no now face.
Yeah, fear of missing out being a classic mover in these circumstances. But, David, I mean, you kind of laid out what it is and sort of why it's going where it is, but why are people so opposed to it? What's the case against? Why is there so much anger, not only amongst fans, but amongst politicians as well?
Well, the politicians, I think, react to, you know, to what the fans are saying, and if there's votes in it for them, they follow that. I don't think really Boris... I'd be surprised if he'd been to a football match in the last few years, but he's certainly not a season ticket holder, as far as I'm aware. Macron in France is actually meant to be quite a football follower. Why is it incensed people? It's because of that sort of childhood dream that you follow a team through thick and thin. And, you know, they might go from the third division to the first division to the Premier League, like Leicester, 5,000-1 outsiders to win the league, and they won the league. It takes away those dreams in many ways. I mean, not totally. You know, there'll be 15 teams in the Super League, and they'll be playing each other, and it'll be fun, it'll be exciting, it'll be dramatic. But if you're not in that little elite group, it's very hard to see how it's going to play out lower down the pyramid. And I think my own son is 15. He said he was desperate last night. You know, sort of, he said he felt sick. Gary Neville, you heard what he said. You know, 8 times winner of the Premier League. He doesn't think the Premier League has a vibrant future under this plan.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Prime Minister also. He tweeted that the government supports football's authorities in taking action. So we know sort of which side he's on. Look, I sympathise. I mean, I'm not a big football fan myself, but I sympathise with that idea that the little guy's getting crushed, if that's how you see it. And it is interesting that once you look below, you know, those top clubs in terms, they generate huge amounts of cash. But basically anybody below the top kind of 20 really doesn't make much at all. And so I guess, how's the project going to be financed? And in the pandemic, there's been a lot about trying to support grassroots sports, lots of grassroots sports that have lost out on all sorts of kind of income streams. So tell us about the money, the financing.
Yeah, no, sure. I mean, so the money, the money is where it's all at, obviously. They're very optimistic that they can sell this package to global sports watchers at a time where, new ways of watching sports are available. OTT companies like DAZN, Amazon. You know, they can sell this product all over the world. It's going to be quite enticing. And what they're doing with those that money is, I mean, JP Morgan's very deeply involved in raising debt finance to get it off the ground, and that's on the back of future broadcast revenues. They are saying that they are going to make payments, solidarity payments, to the football pyramid. That's all the leagues below them. That's something. They're talking about a possible women's league. I mean, that really was given a bit of an afterthought in the press statement, I thought. There don't seem to be any women involved in the management of this Super League. But they do mention that, you know, they would also have a women's league, and women's football is becoming increasingly popular in Europe. There's another thing going on, which is a generational thing. even, you know, the biggest diehard football fans, where if they sit back, they notice that everyone in the stadium or everyone watching on television or certainly paying the subscriptions, yeah, they're older than, you know, 50 probably. Chelsea's average age of the season to go at 53. So this is a kind of, you know, this is an attempt to draw in a new generation. So the old generation might say, yeah, go to the hell, but they might be able to attract a new generation. Yeah.
Well, let's see if it works, if that's what they're after. Certainly it is very, very controversial. But thanks for walking us through it, David. David Hellier there taking us through this new Super League, what it could mean, quite why so many people are so against it.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.